The path I'd like to run through today, it's a long path, and rather than saying what should be the target hemoglobin, what should be the right level of iron, maybe we're looking at the wrong targets and the wrong patients. I want to cover a little bit about whether we should be using ESAs and what dosages. Maybe it's the confounding illnesses that are confusing the use of ESAs, and really should we be going back a step and looking at iron as being the first line in the treatment of uremic anemia. Are we using the right drug for the right type of patient? I put together a trial a few years ago looking at quality of life in the elderly population that Amgen was sponsoring. It had the similar target hemoglobins to the TREAT trial, and unfortunately we had to stop the trial early because of difficulty recruiting. Clinicians were nervous to enter a trial or enter patients into a trial where the low hemoglobin was 90 grams per litre. This trial was looking at the over 70-year-olds. You just wonder if there should be a different target hemoglobin for young people. So what about people with good hearts or bad hearts? We know that the original normal hematocrit trial was also looking at patients who had cardiomyopathy. Is it different for those treating anemia if they have normal cardiac function? Normals versus diabetics. Again, I'll show some slides on that, and maybe the diabetics have skewed some of the results. If you think about your patients with airways disease, the words we use in Australia, emphysema, COAD, if they didn't have kidney failure, they would have a much higher hemoglobin than all of us sitting here in the audience. Does that mean that we should have a higher target hemoglobin for those patients who have chronic kidney disease, whether or not they're on dialysis or not? Again, what about the patients with chronic inflammation versus those who might have normal CRPs? And should there be a different target hemoglobin for males versus females? So in patients in whom higher hemoglobin concentrations are achieved, in fact, it may be that they're just healthier and therefore they're more responsive to the ESAs that are being used. So what is the wrong target hemoglobin? Well, the recently published TREAT paper that's been cited over and over last year and at this meeting, it was a landmark study. And it really turned the world of anemia management upside down because the results were so different to what we had anticipated from the observational data. Now, if you want someone to interpret something from it being upside down, you go down to Australia and readjust your thinking to try and give a totally different perspective on things. As was mentioned by Professor Wanner, there are a series of trials that have been published, dating back 10 years or so for the Antonio Bessarab trial, and then the more recent trials from Europe and the two from America. I just want to focus on the TREAT trial. We know that ESA use of the higher hemoglobin did not reduce the risk of cardiovascular endpoints. However, it did increase the risk of both fatal and non-fatal strokes, and there was also the increase in cancer. So it's really raised the question of should ESAs be avoided in the treatment of anemia? Professor Cano and I were talking last night about an appendix to the TREAT trial, where it looked at the hazard ratios for the composite endpoints broken up upon area of treatment, whether or not it was America. And of interest, Europe and Australia were clumped together. And in that analysis, the hazard ratios were far better for the higher hemoglobin. So that may be something you may want to review, because I think that the Europeans and the Australians do treat anemia differently. And that's reflected very much in the doses of EPO. I've adjusted the choir doses. Unusual trial where you would start patients with epoetin alpha on a fortnightly dose, and it was a huge dose of 20,000 units. And then the slightly lower dose in TREAT, and again, the CREATE trial that Professor Cano highlighted. Is it the type of ESA or ESAs themselves? Mircera has been released on the market for the last couple of years. There's been some controversial press releases for Hematide over the last week. And we're still waiting the phase two trials on the HIF inhibitors, oral agents to treat treat anemia. Maybe they will have a different impact. So is it the underlying diabetes that skews the results? Universal entry to the TREAT trial was the presence of diabetes, but again, CHOIR and CREATE then had lower incidence of diabetes. What about blood transfusions? Why do we prescribe ESAs? Is it simply to reduce the number of blood transfusions? The risk of concomitant viral infections is certainly a lot less now, but maybe there are newer viruses that haven't been discovered yet. Hepatitis C 20 years ago, when we first started using ESAs, was a major problem, yet we didn't have a diagnostic test 25 years ago for that. How would you approach your cancer patients? They've got a creatinine of 350 micromole per litre and they're anemic. Normally they would qualify for an ESA without concern to bring up their blood count. But in this situation, what do you do as practicing clinicians? How do you approach that? Do you give them an ESA because of the risk that it may accelerate the rate of progression of their cancer, or do you rely on blood transfusions? We know about trying to reduce transfusions in patients who are on the transplant waiting list to reduce the risk of HLA sensitisation. The next area I wanted to focus on was the quality of life assessments that have been done. There have been multiple outcomes and also quality of life indices that have been assessed. In the normal hematocrit trial, there was no significant effect on any of the other scales of SF-36, which is used in most of the quality of life assessments, except for the physical functioning scale. CHOIR also did not show any significant improvement. TREAT showed an improvement in one area, but no effect based on the SF-36, despite a good separation of hemoglobins. So there are mixed messages coming out from these trials. Professor Cannard had shown this slide, and I'm going to repeat it on purpose to emphasise it. In the CREATE trial, it did show a benefit in most of the domains for the SF-36 at 12 months. However, by 2 years out, it was only general health and vitality that may remain statistically significant for the change. Again, we're getting mixed messages. What does the FDA think? Well, this is the heavenly body that really dictates to the US how they treat anemia. And whether for better or for worse, that flows on to the rest of the world. The FDA are meeting later this year with clinicians, pharmaceutical industry and other community representatives to try and sort out a balance for what the recommendations should be for anemia management. And in their perspective that was published in the New England Journal, they spoke about how originally apoietin alpha was used for the treatment of anemia and chronic kidney disease to elevate or maintain the red blood cell level and reduce transfusion requirements. Maybe that's all we should be aiming for. So should iron be the starting point of management? This was the slide of the TREAT trial that showed the increase in hemoglobin over time in the placebo group. Now, if you think that the trial went for 5 years, 4 to 5 years, in a group of patients with diabetic nephropathy, you would be anticipating a fall in their GFR over time, and you would also be expecting a concurrent fall in hemoglobin. But these patients were within a clinical trial. And because of that, the attention to iron management is much tighter than, unfortunately, what we practice as clinicians in the community. And because of that, they received more iron and also more red blood cell transfusions in that group. maybe that was a factor that contributed to the maintaining of the hemoglobin. Attention to iron may maintain hemoglobin for longer than is usually anticipated. So I'm going to shift now from the kidneys across to the heart and comment on a trial that was published in the New England Journal recently. They had a range of hemoglobins, and they were given intravenous iron carboxymaltose for the weekly period until maintenance was achieved and then changed to monthly. And the baseline characteristics, just to highlight, were their hemoglobins, their ferritins, and their glomerular filtration rates. The use of iron, intravenous iron carboxymaltose, had a dramatic improvement on both symptoms and functional status. And it didn't matter whether it assessed by the global assessment score or by the New York Heart Association functional class. The use of iron improved both of those. Even the 6-minute walk test, and this was a blinded study where the iron was injected in black covered syringes so that the investigators and the patients were not aware. And also in the visual assessment score, again, a staggering improvement. And it didn't matter in these patients whether they were anemic with a hemoglobin less than 12 or greater, whether they were more iron deficient with a low ferritin of less than 40 micrograms per litre, or what their starting GFRs were. The improvement was shown in all those subgroups. But one of the more important things which has been shown at this meeting is the change in GFR that occurred following intravenous iron. And this is one of the points that we should take home, that there was an improvement in the GFR in the group that received intravenous iron. The improvement occurred early and it was maintained. So it queries what impact the intravenous iron has on renal function, as opposed to the lack of impact that treating anemia with ESAs has. And if you looked at the different predefined subgroups, the impact on renal function extended through a range of them. And these were predefined, it wasn't a post hoc analysis. So to summarise then, the intravenous iron carboxymaltose significantly improved the quality of life, and the positive effects were seen as early as 4 weeks after the commencement of iron. And they continued throughout the trial. Didn't matter if they were anemic or if they had chronic kidney disease or not. So this then led on to how to bring this cardiac iron carboxymaltose trial back to the area of renal anemia and the patients who we look after. Our chairman, Ian McDougall, put together a trial with some of his co-investigators, which is commencing at the moment. And the hypothesis of this trial was that the use of intravenous iron in non-dialysis chronic kidney disease patients with iron deficiency would postpone the need to commence ESA treatment. In other words, we could treat anemia without using an ESA or delay its use. And the rationale really falls back on the guidelines. The CARI guidelines are the Australian iron guidelines that I was involved with, and there have also been the European American. Hopefully they'll all be blended together with the KDIGO guidelines, universal guidelines that they can then be applied to the local countries for their local requirements. But the available studies examining the management of iron deficiency in pre-dialysis patients, they're limited. They're not like the dialysis population. There were a series of uncontrolled trials and also some randomised controlled trials. The details are not specific, but just to summarise, they had variable numbers, variable follow-up, variable use of ESAs, either naive or already on them. Most of them showed an improvement in with intravenous iron, and the more recent trials also showed a reduced side effect profile in comparison to oral iron. So the FIND-CKD trial is to define the role of intravenous iron in non-dialysis chronic kidney disease. Two groups of patients will receive intravenous iron carboxymaltose and will have two target ferritin concentrations set. A third group will receive oral iron, and they'll be followed out for 56 weeks. And the primary objective is to evaluate the long-term efficacy of iron carboxymaltose or oral iron in delaying or reducing the use of ESAs or other anemia management, such as blood transfusion, in patients who have iron deficiency anemia. And there are important secondary objectives as well, evaluating the ESA requirements between the groups, the long-term safety, and that data is vital, and also looking at the tolerability of oral iron in a large trial of 800 plus patients. And also, the dollars need to be counted, and so to assess the health resource and economic burden of the treatment of anemia in these patients. So to finish up, you know, should there be a target hemoglobin when considering iron replacement in patients not on dialysis? There has been so many symposia that we may have turned up to at these meetings or in America asking the question of what the target hemoglobin should be. Should we have a different target hemoglobin for those patients receiving iron? I don't have the answer to that. That question still needs to be answered. So to summarise, there are lots of contentious issues still out there in the path to appropriate anemia management. Iron, though, needs to be brought to the front, and hopefully the FIND-CKD trial using iron carboxymaltose will help answer some of those questions. Thank you.